I got a feeling called the blues, oh Lord, since my baby said goodbye. Lord, I don't know how to do. All I do is sit and sigh. Oh Lord, that last long day she said goodbye. Well, Lord, I thought I would cry.
Fans of musical biographies are in for a treat this holiday season when Playhouse in the Park presents Hank Williams' Lost Highway at the Shelter House Theater. And joining me in the studio this evening is the writer and director, Randall Myler. Welcome, Randall.
Thank you very much.
Now, musical biographies are a genre that have really taken off in the past several years with a variety, many of which you have written and also directed at the Playhouse. What do you think the popularity of musical biographies is?
You have the instant popularity of songs, in this case, a song list that everyone knows. But when I work on them, I've done a lot, and what's happening now is a lot of people are coming to me to see if I would, whether if it's the estate of somebody. And my rule is, if this person wasn't famous, is there an interesting story here? So I've had to turn down a lot of interesting people, singers, musicians. The main thing to me is it's got to be a good story. And Hank Williams is really one of the great stories.
A number of musicals are sort of retrospectives or are genre-based, but a musical biography actually is more than just the music of a person. It tells more about their life and their background and what went into their music. What was it about Hank Williams' story that drew you to this particular musical?
Well, you know, my dad grew up in West Virginia, and although I grew up in Northern California, he met my mother in Pearl Harbor in World War II. He always listened to country music, he and my uncle. So I grew up in a funny household of both rock and roll music from San Francisco and country music, the classic country music, not country today. So I always loved country music. Those people, I live in New York City now because that's where the work is and my family is. So a lot of people there say, well, you know, I don't like country music. And I go, well, no, you don't like bad country music. I remember we did our show in New York, and on their day off, the Rolling Stones came to see the show. And I remember going up to Mick Jagger because he was introduced to me. And I said, essentially, what are you guys doing here on your day off? They were performing in New Jersey at a big stadium. And he said, well, Hank was the original bad boy. And in England, we used to listen to Hank.
And that's one of the things that also I think for a lot of audience members is that perhaps they don't know his story and the background he came from and some of the troubles that he went through.
I think what shocks them the most is how early he died. He never made it out of his 20s, and that's hard to believe. Like a lot of great singers and songwriters, he had a lot of demons.
And in terms of telling the story of Hank Williams' short life, how much of it is supposition based upon you're setting up scenarios that maybe were not documented, and how much of it is from documentation?
That's a terrific question. I'll tell you why. When I decided to do this, I contacted the Grand Ole Opry, Acuff Rose. At the time, it was Acuff Rose Publishing. Now it's, I think, under Sony's wing. And Jerry Bradley took a liking to me and the project. Jerry was the son of Owen Bradley, who recorded most of Patsy's songs. Well, Jerry was the highest up probably at Acuff Rose at that time when I started work on the show. That was a while back now. And he gave me sort of carte blanche to come to Nashville and hang out backstage at the Grand Ole Opry. He introduced me to Grandpa Jones, one of the comedians, and Minnie Pearl, and also a lot of people that knew Hank, Little Jimmy Dickens particularly. And then those that knew him a little bit, Bill Monroe, a few people like that. And so I was lucky enough to hang out backstage and hear stories about Hank. It became clear to me that the show ought to be cuts and pastes of what they said, many of which contradicted each other. Where's the legend start and where's the facts start? And that really intrigued me because I remember Little Jimmy Dickens said to me, if you're looking for Hank in Nashville, he's not here anymore. The old Nashville's not here anymore. Put on a record, spin it, and that's the closest you're going to be to finding Hank Williams. So the legend interested me as much as the facts.
The action of the play, does it cover his entire life, or is it just a section that sometimes brings up points of his earlier life?
It actually covers his entire life on a certain level. The funny thing is that I've been saying is for years, and I've been doing the show around the country a lot, the opening cue was a death notice from WCKY in Cincinnati. And I've used that cue in New York and Los Angeles, you know, everywhere we've done the show. And finally, I've come to Cincinnati to where it actually was the recording. I have the actual recording. So the show really does start with his death notice. And if it's true that you relive your life in 30 seconds when you're about to die, this is sort of what happens as he relives all the people in his life and the songs, the rise and fall.
The song list, of course, is relatively short, considering the short career that he had or short life that he had. But it's full of a lot of songs that a lot of people recognize.
It is. And oddly enough, although he had a short life, his song list is huge. But yes, and sort of coming the full circle as well, a large amount of his hits were recorded here in Cincinnati, and a lot of people don't know that. I mean, you do here in Cincinnati, I know, but a lot of people think he just recorded in Nashville. But he recorded at the Herzog Studio on Ray Street, and some of his biggest hits, including his first hit, Lovesick Blues, I'm So Lonesome I Can Cry, he recorded here. My Bucket's Got a Hole in It. A couple songs with his wife, Audrey. I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry, probably my favorite of his songs. Those were all recorded here in Cincinnati.
A number of his hits were actually released posthumously.
Oh, yeah. The record company, to be honest, found it a lot easier to deal with Hank once he was dead. His rise and fall was fast. They knew about his drinking at the Opry, and Opry was a family show, still is. And he was a problematic character there. And finally, the demand from the audience, Lovesick Blues was such a big hit that they brought him on. And it's sort of legendary how many encores he got singing that song. But he didn't last long at the Opry. He would miss performances, and he was his own. You know, what was Hank? Hank was always proud to say he learned his guitar playing and singing from an old black street singer named T-Tot. He said that was my only singing coach and mentor. So what was Hank? Was he a blues man? Was he a country western? One of my other shows, The Life of Janis Joplin. What was Janis? When I saw her in San Francisco as a kid, she was a rock and roll star, queen of San Francisco. We didn't know she was a Texas Roadhouse singer from Austin and Point South.
The amount of drinking and self-medicating he did is often attributed to a little-known fact that he suffered from spina bifida.
That's right. He had very, very bad back problems, and that... Back then, it wasn't the comfortable buses you took on tour. You were all jammed into a car and long dates. To make your money back then, you didn't make it at the Opry. What you did is you'd sing your latest hit song, and then you'd hightail out in the country for a week and try to capitalize that with one-night shows wherever you could get them. And then you had to be back at the Opry Saturday night, no matter what. And so it was difficult. For a while there, near the end, he traveled with Henry, Minnie Pearl's husband, who had a little airplane. I talked to Henry before he passed quite a bit about Hank. I think he might have known Hank better than anyone, because Hank loved to hang out with the common people that were not necessarily performers. And he took a real liking to Henry and Minnie, of course.
Do you find that in the people that you've been doing musical biographies of, that that's always the case, that they like to hang out with people? Because it seems to me a lot of what you get for details on their lives come from the people that they spent time with. It's not coming from official sources.
Yeah, I think that that is true. I think Hank felt probably like an outsider quite a bit at the Opry as well. He was just different than they were. I mean, it was a little like Elvis. When Elvis first came on the Ed Sullivan Show, they had to shoot him from the waist up because he was dancing. It was shocking. Before Hank at the Opry, they sang about their dog and their mother and, you know what I mean, the great speckled bird. And Hank came along and said, I got a hot rod Ford and a $2 bill and leave your boyfriend. And he was something.
Now, you're directing this production. Do you usually direct the productions that you've written?
It turns out that I do, although other people do them a lot. But I like to get it started that way because I can cut and paste and fix as I go along. Although I left New York City to come here, and I left a show mid-rehearsal there, and I'll go back and finish it, on The Life of Dusty Springfield. And I did not write that. I'm directing it. But I love Dusty Springfield's music, totally opposite.
And you are actually working currently on another musical biography.
Yeah, several, but particularly on Minnie Pearl. Minnie was very instrumental in having this show happen. She took me under her wing, and literally on the stage, we did a reading of it down there at the Roy Acuff Theater back when they had the theme park. We did a reading for the brass. It was for everyone who worked in the business down there. And Minnie came on stage and told them, essentially, you have to do this show. You should let this young man. And she didn't know me from Adam. She didn't have to do that. But that was Minnie. So in the show, you'll see here in Cincinnati, I have my fiddler. It was Minnie Pearl's fiddler opening act. She had an opening act called Peach Pie, a band, and he was the fiddler. And he toured with Minnie and was very fond of Minnie.
Now, in addition to the fiddler, what other musicians do you have playing with this show?
Well, interesting thing is I've always thought of this as a play, not a musical. But it's about a guy who sang. So theater's billed as a musical because there is a lot of songs in it. So I have a lot of actors that do perform with a guitar or a bass that have learned it over the years. My blues singer, Mississippi Charles Bevel, is quite a well-known blues singer that plays T-Tot in the show. Mississippi is now he lives in Chicago, and he's won many, many awards for his singing and acting. There's some really good people in it.
Of course, when doing a musical biography, it is important to get someone who doesn't necessarily look like the subject, but definitely embodies the spirit of the subject. Who's playing Hank in this production?
It's a young actor-singer named Peter Ollier. He now lives in Chicago. He's from really the plains of Iowa, of all things. He came very, very highly recommended. I have not directed him before. I have several performers that I use a lot. And my last Hank grabbed a Broadway show. He's in a show called Once on Broadway playing the lead now. But Peter, very, very excited. He's won many awards for his acting, which appealed to me. And he's done the role in a smaller production that appealed to me. And he came highly recommended. And he's really quite good. You look at him and you go, wow, he's young. And then you forget, well, he's about Hank's age, actually.
Now, as opposed to some of your other subjects, such as Janis Joplin, Hank Williams has a family that is still involved in the business. Hank Jr. is a singer. Has he ever seen this production?
Yes. When we did the show out at the Mark Taper Forum, that's in Los Angeles, he was playing in Los Angeles. So his band, his manager, everyone came. And that was a good thing because Hank can go either way, Hank Jr. And he sent everybody enormous amounts of flowers and notes saying, tell the story, great job and all that. I think he particularly liked it because his manager and those that were older and knew Hank really put a stamp of approval. My show ran for 2 years at the Grand Ole Opry, the old Ryman Auditorium, and then they came again for the opening in there as well.
I'd like to thank this evening's guest, Randall Myler, the director and playwright of Hank Williams' Lost Highway. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
For more information on Hank Williams' Lost Highway, playing at the Playhouse in the Park November 3rd through December 23rd, please be sure to visit our website at wvxu.org. For Around Cincinnati, this is Jim Stumm.
I hate to think it's all over. I've lost my heart, it seems. I've grown so used to you somehow. Thought I'm nobody's sugar daddy now. And I'm lonesome, I got the lovesick blues. Hey, your folks, that love sick blues. This is Hank Williams speaking for all the boys and myself, saying if the good Lord's willing and the creeks don't rise, we'll see you again for long. And until then, Jerry, let's go see Sally Goodman.